It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Milwaukee set homicide records 3 years in a row, but now homicides are down compared to this time last year. That's according to the Milwaukee Police Department's crime tracker. We discuss prosecuting crime with Milwaukee County District Attorney John Chisholm, and you can be part of the conversation, calling in with a question, sharing comments at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. District Attorney John Chisholm, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Well, thank you, Kate. Nice to be with you.
So after three consecutive years of record homicides, Milwaukee experiencing a 31% drop in killings for the first half of this year, but non-fatal shootings were about the same. Why are fewer homicides resulting from the same amount of gun violence?
Well, the hope is that we're returning to some degree of normalcy after the last 3 years of disruption across the entire spectrum. But those two numbers are numbers that I've always paid close attention to in my career as a prosecutor because you can't avoid them. The homicides are a fixed number every year, and the non-fatal shootings are probably the stronger indicator of what's taking place in the community. And so it's still troubling that we are actually slightly above last year's rates in non-fatal shootings. Now, we're down dramatically in the homicides, and you can attribute that sometimes just to luck, sometimes to the outstanding emergency medical services that are available in a tier one trauma center. But still the indicia of suffering in the community is pretty high, and we've got a lot of work to do. We are seeing some light on the horizon. However, I think that having a lot of the intervention services, you know, which I would include schools and daycare centers, health centers being fully open and operational, is starting to just return some sense of normalcy to the community.
Do you draw connections between violent crime and other social disparities like trauma in the home or like poverty?
Absolutely. Always have. I think it's inescapable. And I think the last 3 years actually proved the point beyond any study that you could possibly do. And that is that when you shut down some of the essential services and agencies in a community for a long period of time, and you disrupt the ability to identify problems early and to intervene intelligently, you will see the problems escalate and sometimes spill out of control. So the last 3 years, that's precisely what's happened. And it's kind of overwhelmed not just law enforcement services. It's been emergency medical services, first responder services, just pretty much across the board. People have been overwhelmed. And like I said, the positive thing is that we are seeing signs that things are beginning to return to a more normal plateau. And that still means that there's plenty of challenges.
Hmm. You and Milwaukee Police Chief Jeffrey Norman announced in May more than 60 feuding individuals had been arrested and criminally charged. Has prosecution in these cases made an impact in gun violence in Milwaukee?
Yes. I'm again, that's where I really started my career, was focused on organized criminal violence and trying to disrupt those patterns. And so there's no question in my mind that once it reaches that point, that law enforcement, through a targeted, concentrated approach, can disrupt that activity. The real challenge, of course, is to get to it before it reaches that point. And that's where I go back to what I just talked about, how interrelated all of the efforts are. In other words, you have to have these community-based, community-driven intervention and resources starting at really an early age, so you identify the problem quickly and get the right resources to prevent it from escalating to the point where you need to do sort of the large scale law enforcement driven takedown. But when that's necessary, we have the capacity to do that, and it generally tends to have a pretty meaningful effect. And I think it is related to being able to push down some of the most extreme elements.
Your office is prosecuting more automatic firearms cases than in previous years, and you've raised concerns about a device called a switch that can turn a semi-automatic pistol to an automatic one. How significant are the penalties for possessing a gun with a switch?
Probably not significant enough, and I would attribute that I'm generally not one who yells for longer ranges of sentencing. The penalties we have for most crimes are sufficient. When I started the Firearms Enforcement Unit back in 1999, I can count maybe one or two fully automatic weapons cases that we prosecuted in the first year or two of the operation of that unit. Every year since 2019, we've seen a doubling of fully automatic weapons that are being recovered by the Milwaukee Police Department. So we're likely to be in the 80 to 100 range right now, and the potential for really serious harm to the community is great with these weapons. And I do think that we just have to recognize that is just a reality of life on the streets these days, and it's a danger that law enforcement confronts, but it's also an extraordinary danger to the community. So I think this is one place where I think it would merit the legislature taking a good hard look at the penalties associated with the conversion of what should be a semi-automatic weapon into a fully automatic one.
There has been discussion about the quantity of guns on the streets, and I just want your assessment here. Are the number of guns high in Milwaukee County?
The number of firearms are high in every location in the country. In other words, yes, firearm accessibility is, again, another driver of the violence simply in this respect, and that is that if people are engaged in any kind of dispute, what we often refer to as like dispute resolution, if there's a firearm in close proximity and it's easily accessible, that oftentimes is what that's sometimes the only thing that we can identify as to why shots were exchanged or fired or someone was wounded or ultimately killed. It was just trying to solve an argument. And so, yes, the proliferation of firearms and high capacity magazines associated with those firearms has exacerbated the problems that we encounter with violence in the community.
We're in conversation with Milwaukee County District Attorney John Chisholm, and you can be part of the discussion at any point, calling in with a question, adding your perspective. The number is 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We discuss crime, public safety, and the work of prosecuting criminal cases with Milwaukee County District Attorney John Chisholm. And you can share what's on your mind, calling in with a question or thoughts, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. On Monday, Illinois became the first state to eliminate cash bail as a condition to be released ahead of a criminal trial. And in most cases, people charged with the state's lowest offenses will be released with a citation and a court date. Wondering, could Illinois adopting this change have an effect on crime in Wisconsin?
So I would answer that by simply indicating that the structure of the bail reform in Illinois adds one important element that is not available in Wisconsin, right? And that is that for the lower level offenses, the presumption is simply that someone will not be held in custody. However, for the most serious categories of offenses, people can actually be held without bail, which provides a tool that I have actually advocated for a long time as part of the mixed approach to addressing risk. Because ultimately, that's what we're trying to figure out when a person commits a crime. You want to figure out as quickly as you can, what kind of risk do they pose to the community, to their immediate family members, if it's a domestic violence case. Just trying to assess that is oftentimes more art than science, but you need a whole array of tools. And so, yeah, they're going to increase the options for supervising people on through electronic monitoring. And then there's a category of the serious violent offenses that would potentially not be eligible for bail at all. So I think that the immediate impact on Wisconsin is not likely to be great. And we've been engaged in bail reform here in Wisconsin as well. But the one element that is interesting, will be interesting to look at, is the element of holding without bail.
Yes, in April, Wisconsin voters approved an amendment to the state constitution, making it harder to get out of jail on bail before trial. Is that vote affecting cases in Milwaukee County?
Not at this point in time. The system here for a long time has assessed risk up front. And we use risk assessment tools, and we try to make that distinction between the individuals that are likely to commit new offenses. Now, again, that's been severely impacted in the last 3 years simply through the shutdowns that occurred to the pandemic. Our jail capacity is at its maximum limit again. And that is primarily filled with really serious violent offenses. You know, we're talking a large number of homicide defendants, sexual assault offenders. You've got armed robbers. Just very, very, you know, serious violent offenses.
Let's bring on a call. Chris in Franklin is with us. Hi, Chris.
Hi. I just have a question about ghost guns. I was on a jury panel last week, and this gentleman, the defendant, had about 3 ghost guns. Fortunately, they're off the street. I'm wondering if how to get them off the street. I know it's really tough to get guns off the street, but I guess I'm just curious what John has to say about the ghost guns.
Chris, thank you. Go ahead.
Yeah, Chris, it's a great question. Again, it's just another complicating factor as I look through the efforts that I've engaged in and the office and other law enforcement partners have engaged in, both at the federal, state, and local level to try to reduce the number of unlawful firearms in the community. One of the effective tools has been what we call the ability to trace through the National Integrated Ballistic Identification Network, sometimes just referred to as NIBIN. And that oftentimes at least allows you to figure out where the gun came into the community before it caused the harm. So you can find out if somebody's trafficking in those guns or whatever. The ghost guns essentially are put together from parts that are purchased lawfully, you know, over the internet, and it makes it next to impossible to trace that firearm. And so that's just another tool out of our kit to try to reduce the violence. So there isn't an easy answer to that. You're just going to have to come to a point where you much more strictly regulate these parts, because otherwise you're just going to that tool is just going to evaporate.
We have Milwaukee County District Attorney John Chisholm with us. Let's go to Nicole in West Bend. Hi, Nicole.
Good morning. My question for the guest is, what are your opinions on the assertion that the bail reform that happened or passed in April disproportionately impacts people of color and low income?
Thank you. Again, another great question. And it's an issue that we always have to be very mindful and measure, make sure that we're just open and transparent about what's occurring. And that's, again, why in Milwaukee County for you know, well over 15 years now, we've tried to make that distinction between the people that are coming into the system because they're suffering from drug addiction, mental illness. They're committing crimes that are lower level, what I would call the nuisance offenses, and making sure that we're addressing those types of crimes and individuals in a way that hopefully keeps them out of the system and addresses the problem and also meets the needs of the victims in the community. And then for violent offenders, there has to be a different response. And so the disparity issue is real, but the disparity also exists within the people who are being victimized in the community as well. In other words, the populations that are most deeply impacted, both through the criminal justice system, are often very, very closely intertwined. The victim one day is the offender the next day, the offender one day is the victim the next day. And we see that time and time again.
The state legislature raising pay for assistant district attorneys and public defenders, is that pay hike actually helping your office hire and retain lawyers?
It will, Kate. It's so long overdue that the damage done to the DA program throughout the state is really significant. You saw Dodge County effectively lost their entire prosecutorial unit for a period of time for exactly that reason. And that prompted the legislature finally to start addressing the need for professional, long-term experienced prosecutors to make all these really difficult decisions. At the end of the day, making the distinction between somebody that's coming into the system because they're suffering from trauma and abuse and addiction, and then addressing somebody that's also posing a significant risk to the community and is behaving in a violent, uncontrolled manner, that takes experience, and that takes long-term dedication to a really difficult profession. And I've been proud over my 30 years of working as a prosecutor to be surrounded by people that love this profession and know that they're making a significant impact in trying to keep the community safe, but do it in a fair and just and equitable way. That's the challenge. It's probably the most challenging job for a government lawyer in the country.
Thank you so much for joining us.
I'm happy to be here.
John Chisholm is District Attorney of Milwaukee County. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network.